Welcome back to Leads to Scale, a podcast for marketers about building businesses and scaling ideas. I am your host, Toby Daniels. On this week's episode, we have Obel Brown-West, who is the Executive Vice President, North America, of Digital Client Experience Integration at Weber Shandwick. During the conversation, we discussed the state of digital marketing today and the biggest challenges that we face as an industry, what it means to be digitally centric in terms of how you support your clients, how offline and IRL activity is playing into Weber Shandwick's customer experience strategy. And we also talked about how as marketers, we need to respect customers' attention and spend more time on the quality and value of the experiences that we provide. We also touched on a topic that is very near and dear to Obel, which is the subject of trolling brands. More on that in the episode. As always, thanks again for listening. Please rate and review this podcast on iTunes, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. On the podcast today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Obel Brown-West, who is the Executive Vice President, Digital Client Experience Integration Lead for North America at Weber Shandwick. Welcome, Obel. It's great to have you on the show.
I am thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Obel, you are the recipient of PR Week's Innovation 50 Award, a 2016 PR Week 40 Under 40 honoree. You've led national and global marketing initiatives with Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies in a number of different sort of settings within different agencies, working for brands like United Airlines, TracFone, Wireless, Cars.com, Mattel, etc., etc. But for our listeners, can you share a little bit about these experiences and your overall career trajectory, and then ultimately how you found yourself at Weber Shandwick?
Yes. I would like to say that my career trajectory has been an interesting one, because what I tell a lot of people is that it was somewhat accidental. When I left college at George Washington University, I thought that I was going to be a writer. And I went off to a newspaper, was a freelance writer for the newspaper, a feature writer, was making about $50 an article and needed to move out of my mother's house, wanted to be able to afford clothes. And they had an opening for an advertising assistant. And so I wanted to follow my passion of writing, but I also needed to make a living. And so I did both. I was writing on the side, and my full-time job was actually as an advertising assistant. But when I started to do this in the days of Google being only about a year old, the newspaper came to me and said that they needed someone to help them get the newspaper onto this evolving thing called the internet. I looked young enough to know what a computer and the internet was, and so they said, figure out how to get it onto the internet. And the rest is kind of history, where I figured out how to take that newspaper and their other tiny community newspapers, put them onto the internet, fell in love with this evolving world, went off to see if there would be a place where I could learn more about it and grow my skill set in quote-unquote internet world. And that led me to iProspect, where I was one of the first employees at a tiny startup at the time based in Watertown, Massachusetts. We all know iProspect now is a global force to be reckoned with thousands of employees across the globe, but I was one of the first, and scaled my career from there. Went on to The Week magazine, who said that they needed help with their website. What I didn't realize was that they had no website. So I was the first non-editorial employee there to help figure out how to build not only a website, but to grow it and scale it to a place where they could get advertisers and monetize. Did that, but wanted to be surrounded again by people who could help me grow my skill set within the digital realm. So went off to another small startup called 360i. Pre-acquisition, 360i was only a few people. Got there, we were acquired by Dentsu, and the rest has been kind of a trajectory since then. Ended up at Weber Shandwick about 3.5 years ago. The move to Weber Shandwick was admittedly a little bit of a selfish one. Had been out in California for a few years, but had my son, got married. We wanted to be closer to friends and family, started looking around at opportunities in Chicago, but saw at the time 3.5 years ago that the lines were getting very blurry when it came to what was digital, what is advertising, what was PR. And I continued to see agencies that had been historically PR in nature were starting to win a lot more of the share of voice when it came to business from a brand perspective. And so I made the bet on Weber Shandwick, and it's been history ever since.
Some of my favorite people in this industry have sort of come into the world of digital marketing via some kind of non-marketing sort of specific path. Recently, I had someone on the podcast who was originally a neuroscientist, at another one that was a former journalist, a high school teacher. And oftentimes, I think it's sort of, you know, to be grounded in something that is relatable and certainly transferable is really important. But I think it also just gives you just a slightly different kind of perspective on sort of the industry. And it certainly makes sense that you found yourself, you know, in a strategic role within the communications business. What I would definitely want to do is there's lots to kind of unpack in regards to kind of like your career and how you got to where you are today. But I also just like, you know, given where you are in your career, but also sort of given where we are as an industry, I want to get your sort of perspectives on the sort of state of the industry, or I should say the state of digital marketing today, because I think it's going to like really help to sort of frame the conversation and a number of the sort of the other things that I want to spend time talking about. So how, you know, how do you describe the state of digital marketing today, and what do you see as some of the kind of biggest challenges that we face?
Sure. I get asked this question a lot, just because, as I was saying, the lines between what is advertising, what is digital, what is PR are incredibly blurry. And the state of digital marketing is that it has evolved so much in such a short amount of time. For instance, when I got to The Week, social media didn't really exist. There were only a handful of places where you could potentially be: Dig, Delicious. Facebook wasn't even open to non-university people. So I think the state of digital marketing is that it's ever evolving, and it's evolving in the way that it's getting a little hard to navigate. So because of the quick evolution of digital marketing, I think the biggest challenge that we are facing today is for all organizations making sure that they have the right people that are able to navigate the pace. Because what was relevant 2 years ago is potentially not relevant today. And it's very different from television or radio or things that mediums that have certainly evolved over time, but the evolution was significantly slower. The evolution of digital right now is, by the time I finish with this podcast, I'm sure something would have changed, whether it's an algorithm, whether it is the new version of TikTok. I think that is what the biggest challenge is the pace is so quick. We need to make sure that we're consistently staying up to speed with the new advances that are coming on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I think what is also interesting when we think about challenges, particularly as it relates to what you do in your work in a leadership sort of capacity, but also in terms of like how you provide help and support and value for your clients, is that keeping pace with change is one thing, but I'm also just curious to hear your thoughts about how important it is that we get back to the fundamentals as well, right? Things that have always been true in marketing, or more broadly, just in terms of communications in general. And in a way, we sort of, the reason why I sort of talk a lot about like this inflection point or kind of being a little bit of a crossroads as an industry is the fact that we've kind of lost our way. You know, we've actually spent so much time chasing the shiny object or trying to desperately keep pace with change. And sometimes we've then not spent enough time ensuring that we are also doing the fundamentals right. Like what does that mean to you when you sort of think about that, particularly, you know, when you're, you know, meeting with and thinking about how to help solve problems for your clients?
I love everything you just said, because that is one of the soapboxes I stand on very frequently. Is it's not just about keeping at pace with the evolution. It is understanding, okay, now that you know all of the tools in the toolkit of the things that are possible within this new digital world that changes on a daily basis, if we're really thinking back to the audience and the target and the goals that we're trying to hit, what makes sense for what we're trying to achieve? Does TikTok make sense if you are an organization that is trying to go for a 55 plus audience? Probably not. So really getting back to the fundamentals of understanding the audience, how we need to be reaching them, understanding the types of places where they would naturally be in their everyday consumer journey and intersecting them appropriately. Knowing, of course, all the, again, the tools that you have to do that, but it comes back to who is it that we're trying to talk to? Who is it that we're trying to engage? Who is it that we are trying to improve their overall customer experience? And then backing into, okay, once we understand that, what is the best way to do that, knowing that there's a number of ways that digital marketing can manifest.
And when you sort of, as you're educating yourself and trying to sort of keep up and keep pace, and then when you think about the next year and you know, the opportunities that are out there for you in terms of how you can continue to just do great work, what are you most excited about? Is there anything like one topic area or emerging thing that you think that, you know, is representative of like what's next, but also representative of like how we get back to kind of the basics?
The area I'm most excited about is it feels to me that the conversation around really getting back to deeper understanding of audiences and those consumer journeys, that's what excites me the most, is that regardless of the type of client I'm working with, whether it is an e-commerce client, whether it's a brand client, all of the conversations that I am having that excite me the most are around really getting more in tune with the understanding of the people that we're trying to attract. And what excites me the most about that is that the convergence of offline and online, there's a lot more of that data now available. There's a lot of companies that are working on really connecting those consumer dots to make sure that the budgets are working harder and the investment is working a lot harder. That's what excites me as I'm looking ahead into the future of marketing and really being thoughtful of personalization. I think that is where we should all be focused, and those conversations are starting to increase, which makes me really happy, as well as the technology to be able to do that.
Exactly. And I think that's such an important point. Also speaks to your role as a digital integration lead. I mean, you know, you take this sort of digitally centric customer kind of, you know, view of how to think about serving the needs of the consumers that you're ultimately representing through the brands that you work with. Can you talk a little bit more about what it means to be digitally centric and And then I'd love to kind of expand on the kind of the customer experience piece, because it's so relevant to actually to our 2020 theme, which we'll come on to talk a little bit more about. But talk about what it means to be digitally success-centric in the first instance.
Yeah. So what I think gets lost sometimes in these boardrooms as people are talking about their marketing plans and talking about their customer segmentations and things like that is that if we, again, going back, Toby, to your point of really taking a step back and thinking through the fundamentals, if we're thinking through the fundamentals of people, we as marketers are all consumers, right? And if we think about our daily use of how we are connected and how we are just going through our everyday lives, we have a computer that is always with us. It's called our cell phone. We're constantly connected. We are constantly consuming, and I think there was the Mary Meeker stat that just came out in her Internet Trends report this past May that says that we spend almost as much time being connected digitally that we do sleeping. It's about 6.5 hours. We're always constantly connected, and the average person sleeps for 7 hours a day. So we almost sleep as much as we are connected in a digital sense. So I think when you think of it that way, of being a digitally centric consumer solution, it is about the fact that we as consumers are always on digital. And so if that is true, how are we making sure that we are putting a digital first approach into market to reach these audiences? As far as from a customer experience standpoint, again, we're spending so much time online, whether it is shopping, whether it is communicating with our friends, whether it is texting, whether I just got an alert from my son's school that they're indoors playing because it's raining in Chicago right now. We're always connected, and there's the through point of it being a digital connectivity and communication.
So just building on the idea of the customer experience, I think you touched on a couple of things that are really important, particularly in terms of sort of the how fragmented or fractured the kind of the experience has become in recent years, largely because there are so many new kind of consumer touch points or spaces and places that consumers are engaging. And clearly, you know, we want to be able to map the customer journey and be able to engage at these various different sort of touch points. But I think what's exciting about the sort of the evolution of the customer experience is the fact that technology and digital now provides us with a way of not being able to just track that journey and engage at the different points through social or digital or through email or just like on the internet in general, but we can also engage obviously in the physical world as well. How much is like offline the physical world kind of playing into your kind of strategies as you're sort of thinking about this idea of sort of a more holistic customer experience?
Tremendously. If we are thinking about just ourselves, we don't just live in a digital world, we also live in the physical world. So when I think through the customer experience, I know that all Weber Shandwick, our clients, they are looking to us to say, how are we going to marry the two? How are we, if someone has an experience in store, trying to purchase our product, how are we going to be able to enhance or improve that overall experience? So it's a tough nut to crack, because especially if you are a CPG company, like, you only have so much control in a big box store, but it's definitely something that we're trying to tackle, and I know the industry is trying to tackle how you can actually have the digital aspects influence the physical in an environment that you don't necessarily control all of the, you don't control the employees, you don't, and you don't control the way that they stock. You don't control necessarily all the infrastructure, but there are ways that because of the smartphone and other technology, you can potentially influence what happens in store. You can influence the showrooming that happens. You can potentially influence, like, although your product might not be the first product that is on display at an end cap, you can potentially influence a push notification to get them to become aware of where your product is in store. So these are all things that I know all marketers, but in particular Weber Shandwick, is trying to work with our clients to really influence, making sure that there is a through line of digital and also physical.
We interrupt this week's episode of Leads to Scale to share an update in regards to our forthcoming conference in London. The 10th annual edition of Social Media Week London, Europe's premier conference for media and marketing professionals, is taking place at the QE2 Conference Center in Westminster between October 31st and November 1st. This year's event will continue the 2019 global theme Stories with Great Influence Comes Great Responsibility, a conversation that will explore how social media has become the most influential story platform in the world that has the power to both unite and divide us. Check out our first wave of speakers and secure your pass by visiting socialmediaweek.org/London. And don't forget to use the code LEADS2SCALE at the checkout to save an additional 10% off your pass. All right, let's get back to the show. So I know that, you know, commerce is a huge piece of this, you know, driving customers obviously through the funnel, thinking about the journey, but thinking about obviously where we want them to end up and how we want them to transact, or in the ways in which we want them to convert. Commerce is key. Social commerce is I guess a relatively new sort of emerging aspect of the kind of the larger e-commerce landscape. What's interesting, I think, about social commerce is the fact that when you think about sort of Instagram and just the impact it's having on e-commerce, we're really now starting to see it operating at a scale that we've just like never seen before. And I know this is like a really important kind of part of your sort of broader digital practice. I'm just kind of interested to kind of hear about any specific examples that you can share where you're seeing brands bridging the digital and the physical, but really having success in terms of how that translates into conversions at the commerce level.
Yeah, absolutely. So one brand in particular, who's a little private, so I won't give all their details, but it is a commodity. So think of it that way. It is a commodity brand that you can't buy it online. It's a perishable good. But really connecting the dots of figuring out how to hyper-target the audiences that we know are buying this product and getting them to connect the dots from a digital perspective to push them physically into store to purchase. Since we started really figuring out, again, going back to the audience and figuring out exactly who these audiences were, how to find them within digital channels, and make sure that we were giving them the content and the messaging and sometimes a potential coupon if that's what they needed as we're going through their journey, really getting a better understanding of this audience has led to tremendous uptick in buying in store. And we're able to prove that through a number of studies, again, data, that we're able to connect the dots between what we do online that drives them into commerce channels. Another brand that we work with, or it's a suite of brands, it's in the prepaid wireless category, similar situation. They sell online, but they know that, or we know that their audiences prefer to purchase in store because it is it's very much a considered purchase. And so again, making sure that we understand everything that we can about these audiences the different types of messages that they need to consider us as a purchase over a postpaid wireless provider. And then once they get into store, giving them, again, the extra nudge that they need in store. We don't necessarily control the stores that they go into. Some of them are big box, but we have ways of making sure that we are specifically targeting them in store so they can find our product. We have ways of making sure that we have activations and surround sound to give them everything that they need to make, so when they are in store, we stand out above the others. So again, connecting those dots of using digital to get really smart and targeted about our audiences and know everything we can about them to be as targeted as possible, but then continuing knowing that their journey will take them into store, making sure that we have the types of content and the types of extra nudge in their face that they would need to end up buying in store, if not online.
Got it. So this past summer, you spoke at a conference that I won't mention because they are a competitor of ours, but you spoke on the subject of brand trolls. So
yeah.
What are brand trolls?
I love this topic, and I will gladly come do this conversation at Social Media Week as well. But
only if it's on an exclusive basis.
And I will make it exclusive. But it's fascinating over the past few years, the growth of the brand troll has just been fascinating. And so a brand troll effectively is brands who have found a quote unquote trolling voice within digital and social media. And so some of the examples that I shared, which were kind of fascinating, is everyone talks about Wendy's. Wendy's has a crazy, snarky voice within social media. And what I talk about is that if you actually go back in the Wayback Machine of 25, 30 years ago and take a look at Wendy's actually always had a little bit of that snarky tone to them, where if you look back at Where's the Beef, Where's the Beef was basically Wendy's calling out their competitors, saying that they didn't put enough meat on their burger patties. It was all about bread and not enough meat, right? That was the basis of Where's the Meat. So when you look at Wendy's, they've just evolved that into today's social media kind of trolling environment, where you can't get away from trolling. Even if you paid no attention to advertising and only paid attention to the news, our president trolls on a very frequent basis, where he is on Twitter actively trolling people who speak against him. So trolling is prevalent, trolling is everywhere. I think what I talk about more so in my presentation is that it doesn't necessarily match the voice of a lot of the brands that are doing it. You can make a case for Wendy's, but I think when brands go down the trolling route, they're doing it for attention. They're doing it to potentially be relevant, especially in a world where brands are trying to find a human voice and social media is the one outlet that they have to have one-on-one dialogue with audiences. They're trying to figure out what that voice might be. I think some of them inadvertently get into the snarky, funny, humorous realm when that doesn't necessarily match their brand persona that they've built. But it is, the talk really digs into the conversation of, why are we doing this? How did we get here? What in our environment has led to a place where social media has become a breeding ground for brands that try to stand out in this way? So more on that when I do that at Social Media Week next year.
It raises a few questions. I mean, you know, one question that comes to mind is like, you know, is this really something that brands need to be sort of thinking about and taking seriously as an opportunity, to, you know, to be able to stand out, to be able to capture consumers' attention, to be able to, you know, even make the occasional like headline? Or should brands really be investing their time trying to figure out like what their kind of core purpose is and how that is reflected in what they do from a sort of a communication standpoint?
Yeah.
If a client is coming to you and saying, hey, what's all this about trolling, and you know, should we do it? Like, what's the real advice that you're providing in that situation?
The advice I feel like I sound like a broken record, but it's so true. Is that what your audience is looking for? That's what it all comes back to. Is that the audience expectation? For instance, I have an example within the presentation of two studies that Sprout Social put out. I think it was sometime last year. And one study says that consumers are looking for brands that they have an affinity for to be more social and to be on social media, to communicate, to engage, to give them information, et cetera. But the next study that Sprout Social put out was that consumers do not like, and it's not talking specifically to a category, it's just a sweeping generalization. Consumers are not interested in brands who are mean. They're not interested in brands who make fun of other brands and brands that use slang. So if you look at those two studies at face value, the question is, okay, so why are so many brands doing this? What do they potentially know about their audiences that we don't know? Because there must be something there. So when I have these conversations with clients, the first thing that I always say is, we need to figure out if this actually makes sense for your audience, because it might not. There's an example that I always point to as well with the Air Force, where the Air Force, they put out a tweet last year when the whole Laurel and Yanny conversation was a big conversation. They put out a tweet where they tried to engage in that conversation, but they were making fun of the fact that they had just released a drone strike in Afghanistan. Their audience did not like it. And it's because that's not the way that people think of the Air Force. So people think of the Air Force in a very serious, subdued, safe way. And so for them to be joking about a drone strike, it shocked people. And if they had done the due diligence to realize that that's not necessarily how people think of them, they might not have done it. So it always comes back to, what is your, to your point, what is your purpose, and what is the voice and tone that your audiences are actually expecting of you?
I think that's just so spot on. It's such great advice as well. So just going to switch gears a little bit. At Social Media Week, we believe the future of marketing will be human first and experience driven. What does human first marketing mean to you when you think about the Weber Shandwick offering, your capabilities, and how you are sort of adjusting to the needs of the modern consumer?
Yes. Again, God, I feel like I'm sounding so broken, but it is so important. At Weber Shandwick, our mantra has been for a number of years, engaging always. And this year we elevated that to we solve. And engaging always is still there, but it's that we are solving. And the reason for that is because, and it answers the what does human first mean, as an organization, we are always trying to figure out what will earn our audience's attention, and how are we solving our audience's problems in an authentic way that earns their attention. So again, it comes back to, for me and for Weber Shandwick, if we are thinking of human first marketing, that's within our DNA. We've always been trying to put the audience need first, and then solving their need is how we put our marketing and our communications initiatives into market.
Well, one of the things that is also, I think, important here, and again, I just like kind of love your thoughts on this. When we think about sort of the needs of the consumers, something that just seems so obvious that consumers need is to be spending perhaps less time connected and engaged in digital or through social media on messaging platforms and in those types of environments. And I'm not suggesting necessarily that they will, because the trend isn't necessarily tracking in that direction. But what the message it actually sends to marketers is that we need to establish a deeper and a more profound respect for people's time and attention. So if that's true, then what do we as marketers need to do about that? Like, what does that really mean? Because at the moment, we're sort of in this, you know, more content, more information, engage them in more and different places. It doesn't seem, at least from what we can see and how we're sort of looking at the broader landscape, it doesn't seem that there's enough time being really spent in the quality of those experiences, and there's not enough respect being paid towards the value of consumers' time and attention. What are your thoughts on that?
Completely agreed. There's a movement right now to detox from digital, where if you actually, you can, there's a Wikipedia page talking about, I think it's either social detox or digital detox, where people are trying to figure out ways to limit their time within digital social channels because of the fact that we're walking around with a computer and a phone. We're constantly connected. Like I said, Mary Meeker said it, we're spending almost as much time connected as we sleep. So I think what that means for marketers is that we have to be even more precise in the content and the messaging that we're putting into the world, because people are starting to ignore it. Pop-up blockers are real, and it's been around for a while, but it's catching steam because people are so inundated with content and choice. So from a marketing standpoint, certainly we don't want to turn our messaging off, but when we are trying to make sure that we stand out and we're trying to make sure that people are actually paying attention, we have to be even more precise with who is it that we are trying to go after and what is going to actually get them to pay attention, whether it is from a not only a content standpoint, but even from a strategic targeting standpoint. We just have to be that much more fine-tuned to make sure that we are getting in front of people, not in just an impression, constantly showing things over and over and over again, but making sure that when we do show something, it stands out and it is noticed by people who are consistently inundated, and some of which who are planning on taking a detox in the near future.
I love that. Yeah, the pushback is very real, and I think there are, just look at the numbers, particularly, you know, in terms of the people that are just even using like screen time as a function within iOS as just a way of being able to at least just understand and measure the amount of time that people are engaging. But I think, you know, we have to sort of also recognize, particularly when you think about kind of like, you know, Gen Z, as they grow older, as their priorities shift, they are also at the point at which they sort of reach young adulthood, just going to be so fluent in the use of these technologies. And these technologies will be so deeply integrated and interwoven into their lives in so many different ways that the decoupling is just not going to happen. There is no point at which, at least in my opinion, where people will be completely separating themselves from their technologies. And I think it's important. I think it's okay for us to kind of like be somewhat accepting of that idea, as scary as it might seem. But what is not acceptable is if that is true, then people spending time engaging with content or in experiences or with people that ultimately are not helping them to have healthy and productive lives, then that's a problem.
Absolutely.
And that's where we need to start putting in better benchmarks and guardrails to help people understand the difference between what is healthy behavior, healthy consumption habits versus not. I mean, there's certainly enough time and energy spent thinking about this from the perspective of food. So it's time that we started to also think about this from the perspective of what we are digitally consuming. And I think that's key.
I completely agree.
Well, Obel, it's always wonderful to talk to you. I just think you have such a great perspective on everything that's happening in the digital landscape today. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me. Hopefully I didn't ramble too much.
Thank you for listening to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. Leads to Scale is edited and produced by Al Manarino. For the latest news and insights, or to learn more information about how to get involved with future Social Media Week events, please visit socialmediaweek.org.